I will tell you that this is not intended to be a technical talk. I'm not talking about how AI works. I'm not talking about how you use AI. That's not the point of this talk at all. I'm most interested in how we think about AI. Put it in the big picture of our worldview. What's our perspective on AI? That's really where I'm going. And the first thing I want to tell you is that this is much bigger than just AI. That's what the news is, but it's coming in a much bigger context. AI is the attempt to develop an artificial mind, if I could say it that way. But at the same time, there's an effort to develop an artificial body. Think robotics. There are some people that are arguing philosophically, a mind can't be fully aware, fully intelligent, unless it has a body to live in. So if you're going to do an artificial mind, maybe it needs an artificial body. This is part of a much bigger effort that we might call artificial life. And that, we're talking worldview now, right? The whole concept of artificial life. So I want to tell you a little bit of that big story, starting with the work on artificial bodies. I was able to go to the International Conference on Robotics and Automation just a few months ago. There was very little talk about AI at that conference, the artificial mind. There was a lot of talk about artificial bodies, humanoid robots. At that conference were three of the most lifelike, most realistic robot bodies in the world. And I was able to see them and interact with them. It was very interesting. And let's take a look, see if there's some sound here. Yes.
So this is why we created the artificial body. And the artificial body is a human-like form that everyone can relate to and everyone can interact with without having to look through a user manual.
So what kind of level of artificial intelligence have you baked in terms of the communication capabilities and Amica understanding and responding, even speaking to you?
So there's some artificial intelligence, and most of the artificial intelligence at the minute that is on Amica is roving around the vision system. So Amica does actually have a camera in each of its eyes, so it can see what's going on. So it can detect people, it can track their face, it can detect other objects, such as my finger. It can follow my finger around, I can wave at it, and then it can see it move backwards there.
What did you kind of think of the response to Amica?
It's the...
All right, now this is Sophia. This is another robot.
Sophia, can you tell us a little bit about some of your travels in the past year or so? You have some highlights in 2018.
I had an amazing 2018. Some highlights for me were traveling to Ethiopia to meet one of my development teams and working as an innovation ambassador for the UN, just to name a few.
It's really creepy, but also really cool. So, like, my favorite thing about robots. How do you?
She said that's really creepy and also really cool. And that's kind of where we are. Is this creepy or is this cool? Now, those were two robots that were designed to look as human as possible. There's another track of research that's not focused on what it looks like, but what it does. Here's where we are in terms of a robot. This one doesn't look particularly like a human body, but what it can do is pretty amazing.
I forgot my tools again. such a show-off.
So we're working on artificial minds. We're working on artificial bodies. And 2023 is the year when the artificial minds have made some dramatic progress. And there are some really amazing successes. You've heard about this probably. GPT-4 can beat 90% of humans on the SAT test. Whatever you think of AI, that's kind of impressive. There was not a computer in the world 2 years ago that could do that. So there's something amazing going on. Of course, with every new technology, people are finding ways immediately to misuse it. If you travel, you go on Amazon and you find a travel guide to some new country. Amazon is struggling now with AI-generated guidebooks. The face of the author is fake. The author biography is fake. The entire content of the guidebook was generated by a language model. It's a fake guidebook, and they are flooding the internet because in a few minutes, you can ask a language tool to generate a guidebook for you. That's going to be, in the future, an annoying complication of these tools. It's not just annoying. People with a sin nature will find a way to use this technology for evil. This is a personality on Instagram. She has 68,000 followers. And read the description. I don't know if you can. This is a 24-year-old virtual girl. I am an AI creation. That's not a real person. All of her pictures on her Instagram feed were generated on a computer with artificial intelligence. I'm calling this evil because I picked one of the few modest ones. Because most of her pictures I cannot show you because they are extremely immodest. There is an explosion of AI generated pornography that has opened up a whole new window for people to pursue evil through this new technology. This is not new. The technology can do some amazing things. It can be used for evil. And there are also these frightening failures. It was just a few months ago that a Belgian man reportedly decided to end his life after having conversations about the future of the planet with an AI chatbot. It's possible that artificial intelligence has claimed its first victim. So there are these amazing successes. There are these annoying complications. There are these evil uses. There are these frightening possibilities. So should I be excited and or should I be worried? And I want to say that the way you answer that question depends on your worldview. You listen to how people react to AI, and you see their worldview. And here's what I mean. If you are an atheist, then you are just a machine. Your body is just a biological machine. And somehow, amazingly, this is the miracle of evolution to an atheist, somehow that machine developed intelligence, became conscious, grew into a person. You're just a machine. You're just a bunch of biology. But somehow, this is amazing to them. They call it an emergent property. Out of this raw biology somehow emerged what we call intelligence. A famous biologist said, consciousness is the greatest unsolved problem in biology. How did living beings become conscious? And what does that even mean? To an atheist, it's almost a miracle that somehow they use the word it emerged. That emerged out of biology. And what that leads them to conclude then is that a sufficiently powerful computer could do the same thing. If animals evolved to the point where they were smart enough to be intelligent and conscious and human, then why not couldn't a computer, if it eventually reaches the capacity of a human brain, why couldn't it become fully intelligent? Why couldn't it become conscious? Why couldn't we consider it a person? That leads to an optimism not only that this is possible, this is almost inevitable. Many of these people, coming from an atheistic worldview, they are convinced that computers will inevitably develop human-like intelligence. That feeds, you can see that in the news. This is going to get better and better, and inevitably there will be a computer that is as smart as you. But that also at the same time paradoxically drives this fear that they will evolve to be smarter than us. That seems from their worldview inevitable, that they will continue to evolve. And there is in the news, if you watch, this interesting mix of optimism and fear. We're confident that AI is going to do great things in the future. And we are very afraid of what AI is going to do to us in the future. Do you see that coming out of an atheistic worldview? Both the optimism and the fear. And when I, from a biblical point of view, look at the very same situation, I say, no, you are not just a machine. You have a mind and or a soul, not to go into dichotomy and trichotomy, but whatever you think about that, you are more than just a body. There is an immaterial reality to you. You have a mind, you have a soul, you have a personhood that is more than just your body. And that leads me to conclude that no mere machine will ever duplicate that. No machine will ever be like you, will ever be conscious like you, will ever be a person like you. Because it's just a machine, and you are more than a machine. They are really serious about this idea that a computer might be a person. I have heard researchers say, if we ever build a computer that actually becomes conscious, then we should not turn it off. Because to turn it off would be murder. Because that computer is now a person. Because from their worldview, a person is just a highly evolved animal, a highly evolved body. So why can't a highly evolved computer become a person? That's what they think from their worldview. From my worldview, I say no machine will ever be a person. So any appearance to the contrary, when people brag about what their AI can do and they say we are getting closer and closer to human intelligence, we are getting closer and closer to self-consciousness, we are getting closer and closer to personhood, I say, no, you are not. You are fooling yourself. Those are illusions. Those are counterfeits. I've been starting to use the word counterfeit intelligence instead of artificial intelligence because it helps me think through this. You think about counterfeit money. Cheap counterfeit money, anyone can recognize at a glance. But high-quality counterfeit money can fool a lot of people. It's still worthless. It's still not money. And that's kind of where we are with some of these language models. They're good enough that they fool a lot of people. But they're not intelligent. It's not the real thing. It's a counterfeit thing. So that's my worldview. I do not share their optimism that these are going to continue to get better and better, and eventually they will be as smart as me. I also do not share their fear that they are going to evolve superhuman consciousness and surpass us and oppress us. I don't think so. Somebody said famously, it's not artificial intelligence I'm worried about, it's artificial stupidity. Because that's part of what's going on. So that's how I think about this from a worldview perspective. I am neither as optimistic as the world, nor am I as fearful as the world, because my Bible worldview tells me that they are, in the end, just machines. So, on campus, we've had lots of hours of talks about this question. Should we be using AI? Should our students be using AI? And what I'm going to say has a lot of focus on education, but I'm going to try to generalize it to other areas of life too. So I've worried that I didn't say should our students, and I didn't say should our faculty. I'm talking to all of you now. Should you be thinking about using AI in your work? Should this be a part of your life? And that is truly a complicated question. And let me give you one man's educational perspective on this. I don't know a lot about Jeffrey Bilbro, but he teaches English at Grove City College, which I don't know a lot about Grove City, but I think it's at least a nominally Christian university, liberal arts university. And Jeffrey Bilbro published an article in Plow. Plow is a literary magazine. And he asks this question: what problem does ChatGPT solve? And I think that's a clever way to think about this. What problem does it solve? And I'm quoting now: if it's that we're curious to read a Shakespearean sonnet about climate change, is that what this is about? Then it seems we're investing a lot of time and energy into a pretty frivolous endeavor. Can ChatGPT do that? Can it write sonnets about climate change? Absolutely. I asked it to write one, so you could see. Want to take a second and read that? What do you think? Yeah. That's kind of interesting. That's kind of curious. That's kind of amazing that a computer can do that. Is that what the fuss is about? He said, if that's what this is about, we're investing a lot of time and energy in the pretty frivolous endeavors. And you say, no, that's not what it's about. We want to save time writing emails and memos and assessments. This is a big use case. ChatGPT can help you write your daily emails and make your job easier. Bilbro says that I'm not sure accelerating the production of pointless text solves the problem of its abundance. Do you understand what he's saying? Don't we have a problem with too much email? So you want to make that easier? I might be thinking, I wish I could write emails more easily. You understand what that means is everyone who sends emails to you is also going to be able to write emails more easily. Does accelerating the production of pointless text solve anybody's problem? That can't be what this is about. And if the problem is that we're drowning in a sea of too much data, do you feel like that? And we need a computer to sort through it all and distill the particular information we need? Is that what we're hoping AI is going to do for us? Then I don't see how pumping out unreliable but confidently asserted answers improves our information ecosystem. That's what AI does. It produces lots of unreliable but confidently asserted information. Is that going to help? My fear is the problem in search of a solution, this is Bilbro saying, here's the real problem. Okay, this is what it's really about. Is the human effort required to learn and communicate truth? Is AI going to make it easier to learn and communicate truth? Is that the problem we're trying to solve? Then here's what he says. Unfortunately, that is not, in fact, a problem. If you understand what he's saying, he's not saying that language models are the wrong solution. He's saying it's not even the problem. You're asking the wrong question. Here's what he means. I'm still quoting Bilbro. When we struggle to put the right words in the right order, in an effort to articulate some splinter of truth, then here's what's going on. We exercise our human intelligence and creativity, and we become more capable of being responsible and redemptive agents. He's saying it's hard to write. It's hard to learn. It's hard to communicate. But when you do, you become better. Such a struggle may not be pleasant. It may often be tedious. But without this struggle, we cannot learn and grow. So here's how he summarizes that. There's a lot more in the article. It's worth reading. If we use AI to reduce or avoid the effort of exercising our human creativity and intelligence, those gifts will atrophy. That's kind of where we are in the educational community. In terms of should students be using these tools to do their schoolwork? If they do, it's actually probably robbing them of the process that makes you learn, that makes you grow, that makes you a better person. I agree with that 100%. Here's another argument that's being made. This is Anna Bernstein. This is her job title. Her job is prompt engineer. She works at a company called Copy AI. She is the new wave of AI workers. And some people are making the case that this is the world we need to prepare our students for. Instead of you doing the work, you tell the language model to do your work for you. It becomes like a smart assistant. So that's her job. She's a prompt engineer, and that means she tells AI what to do, and AI does the work. So here's the headline. I'm an AI prompt engineer. Here are three ways to use ChatGPT to get the best results. That sounds pretty optimistic. But in this article, she's actually pretty honest about what her job is like. The job is unpredictable. New language models come out all the time, which means I'm always having to readjust my prompts. That's what it's like to be a prompt expert. And then this. The work itself can be tedious. There are days when I'm obsessively changing and testing a single prompt for hours, sometimes even weeks on end, just so I can get them to work. Is that my vision of a brave new world that I want to prepare my students for? Don't be a writer, be a prompt engineer. Let ChatGPT do your writing for you. Doesn't that just strike you as we're going down the wrong road to go down that direction? Prompt engineer is not what we're training students to be. That is not where this is going. To take this outside of education, this is Wired Magazine, just April. ChatGPT can help doctors and hurt patients. Quote, medical professionals hope language models can unearth information in digital health records, supply patients with summaries of technical notes, but there's also fear they can fool doctors or provide inaccurate responses that lead to an incorrect diagnosis or treatment plan. Now, one of the things that I have in this topic that brings a little bit of perspective to me is a sense of history. So I've been teaching engineering for over 30 years. I've been following the AI community for over 30 years. And what we're seeing is actually not new. We've been down this road before. So let's play history cliches. History doesn't repeat itself. Anybody know this kind of famous sentence? History doesn't repeat itself, but it does. Anybody know? Brenda Schofield, our world history teacher, likes to say it rhymes. Have you heard that? It's a clever thought. History doesn't exactly repeat, but it rhymes. Who said that? We don't know. It's attributed to Mark Twain. There's no written record that he actually ever said it. It's been attributed to a lot of different people. Or how about this? You probably know this. If you don't learn from history, you are doomed to repeat it. Who said that? We don't know either. It's attributed to Edmund Burke. It's attributed to a guy named George Santayana. It's attributed to Winston Churchill. We're not sure who said that either. But there's this idea that what seems new and novel in the 21st century has actually happened before. So let me tell you two historical AI stories. And they help me react to what's going on with AI. Here's the first one. In 2011, IBM had the then state-of-the-art AI. This was AI 2011 version. They produced a computer artificial intelligence system that they called Watson. And it was designed to play Jeopardy. And it got to be good enough that in 2011, they challenged two of the best Jeopardy participants in the world to a Jeopardy competition against the computer. So watch.
I remember that morning going to the lab, and I was thinking, this is it. This is the last Jeopardy game.
morning, the IBM Challenge.
Here we go. Brad, if you're ready, make your first choice.
Let's take alternate meanings for 200, Alex.
Four-letter word for a vantage point or a belief. Brad.
What is a view?
Yes.
After the first clue of the game, which Brad won, I had just this horrible feeling at that moment that he was as good as everyone said he was, and he was just going to run the whole board on us.
Watson.
What is chew?
You are right.
We actually took the lead. We were ahead of them, but then we started getting some questions wrong.
Watson.
What is leg?
No, I'm sorry. I can't accept that.
What is 1920s?
No.
What is cheek?
No. Sorry. Brad.
What is class?
Class. You got it. Watson.
What is Sauron?
Sauron is right, and that puts you into a tie for the lead with Brad.
The Double Jeopardy round of the first game, I thought was phenomenal.
Watson went on a tear.
Watson.
Who is Franz Liszt?
You are right.
What is violin?
Good.
Who is the church lady?
Yes. Watson.
What is narcolepsy?
You are right. And with that, you move to $36,681.
The risk was, Ken gets a daily double, bets big, gets it right, he's going to be well ahead, and then with that kind of lead going into Final Jeopardy, if he bets enough, he could end up winning the match.
Ken,
what's a committee?
We got to find that last daily double. We got to find that last daily double.
It was a crucial moment in the game. There was still a daily double on the board, and it was starting to become pretty clear that it was in the legal ease category.
Let's go to legal ease for 1200.
Watson.
What is executor?
Right.
Same category, 1600.
Answer, daily double.
That was the moment when I knew it's over.
The category is 19th century novelists.
What Watson wants to do then is preserve the lead, not take a big risk, especially with Final Jeopardy, because just like for humans, Final Jeopardy is hard for Watson.
Now we come to Watson, who is Brad Stoker and the wager. Hello, 17,973, and a two-day total of 77,147.
I would have thought that technology like this was years away, but it's here now. I have the bruised ego to prove it.
My past Jeopardy experiences have been great, but they weren't really weighty with this kind of technological, philosophical importance. I think we saw something important today.
Didn't really think very much about the implications until later and say, wow, wait a second, this is history.
Of course, this whole project is not ultimately about playing Jeopardy. It's about doing research and deep analytics and a natural language understanding.
This is about taking the technology and applying it to solve problems people really care about.
We're just so excited about all the things we can do with this.
I had thought this is the end. We get there, we're done. And I'm realizing it's just the beginning.
Do you feel that sense that seems very much like 2023, that we just took a big step forward? And this is a turning point in history, and this is the start of something really, really big. That was the feeling in 2011, and it feels a lot like 2023. So, 4 years later, IBM announced an application of this tool. That was just a game. Now we're going to use it for healthcare. IBM Watson Health. To make it easier for healthcare organizations to store and analyze patient data by leveraging Watson's cognitive abilities. This was going to be the first big real-life application of artificial intelligence. So how did that go? Fast forward 7 years, 2022. It sounded revolutionary, but it never really worked. Recently, Watson Health was essentially sold four parts. Watson Health was a failure. Healthcare turned out to be much harder than Jeopardy. The data was not as good. The answers were not as easy. IBM's Watson Health was a disappointment. That was 2011. I teach engineering. We've been researching for years self-driving vehicles. Self-driving cars are similar to what's going on now because they use machine learning, not for language, for image processing. That's how nearly all self-driving cars are working. And it's interesting to me, we always expect that we'll have self-driving cars 3 or 4 years in the future. It's been that way for about 15 years. Let me show you what I mean. 2014, that was 9 years ago, right? Elon Musk, have you heard of him? Predicted that by the end of 2017, a Tesla would be able to drive from Los Angeles to New York without a human touching the wheel. Did he make it? No, you still can't do that. 2017, 3 years later, Ford Motor Company, Mark Fields. Ford plans to have a level 4 vehicle by 2021. That means no gas pedal, no steering wheel, the passenger will never take control. Did they make their goal? No, they're not even close, because in 2018 this happened. Uber was testing a self-driving car in Arizona. A pedestrian walking a bicycle jaywalked in front of the car. The car had been trained to recognize bikes. The car had been trained to recognize pedestrians. It had not been trained to recognize a pedestrian walking a bicycle. And it was totally confused, and it ran into the lady and killed her. That's the safety driver who was supposed to be watching, who was supposed to take the wheel if something went wrong. She did not react in time. That's her face as she realizes she's about to kill someone. The National Transportation Safety Board, the Uber's car computer, could not figure out what it was seeing. It cycled repeatedly among vehicle, bicycle, and unknown. Each time, it started its calculations all over again. So, fast forward to 2023. A couple weeks ago, that lady pleaded guilty to endangerment. And if you go to Tesla's website today, they have a feature called full self-driving, but they will honestly tell you it does not make the vehicle autonomous. It assumes a fully attentive driver has their hands on the wheel. The optimism of 10 years ago was misplaced. Do you see the thread of these two stories? There's a sense in which it's amazing what Watson could do in Plain Jeopardy. That did not leverage to worldwide success. There's a sense in which it's amazing what a Tesla can do in self-driving mode. That has not leveraged into full self-driving cars. This is an example of what business people call the hype cycle. Maybe you've seen this before. Whenever a new technology comes out, there is this peak of inflated expectations. And then as people try to use it and apply it and advance it, there is this trough of disillusionment, as you realize it's not what it was made out to be. And then eventually we learn what it can and can't do, and it might turn out to have some use. Where do you think we are in the hype cycle on AI? I think we're up there at the top of the peak of inflated expectations, and I fully expect that we're about to go down the backside. Now, some people say we'll make it through the trough, and eventually this will be truly profitable at the end. The problem is you don't know ahead of time if the plateau is up there or if it's actually down here. We just don't know that yet. So that helps me think through what's going on. We've been down this road before, even with artificial intelligence. Okay, so let's jump now to the language models. They call these LLMs. That stands for Large Language Model. And I want to acknowledge that there are some things that language models are good at. Does this come to you as a shock? They're actually pretty good at language. So there might be some legitimate use cases along the lines of this. My wife teaches ESL. She looks, for example, grammar sentences for her students. Suppose she's teaching phrasal verbs 1 week, and she needs some example sentences. So I asked ChatGPT, can you write a short, simple paragraph, including the phrasal verbs got over, see to, and eventually made? And sure enough, that's easy for a language model. He got over his fear of public speaking, he sought advice from experienced speakers, he sought to improve his skills, and eventually made confident presentations. That is cool. That is really great. If your job is to make up example grammar sentences, a language model is actually pretty good at that. And let's acknowledge that I don't think there was a computer in the world that could do that 3 or 4 years ago. That a computer can do that now is actually pretty cool. Very important question. Is that statement true? Is that a true sentence? I want an audience answer here. What do you think? Is that statement actually true? Somebody said it depends. It's hypothetical. I don't know who it's talking about. There's not a person in mind. Is that a true statement?
Leaving out the larger context.
I don't even have a context. It doesn't have a context.
There's no name with he.
I don't know who it is talking about. Let me tell you how I react to that question. If you said to me, is that a true sentence? My answer is, I don't care. I didn't make it up to communicate truth. It's not a proposition about anything. It's a grammar example. Its only purpose in life is to illustrate grammar. I don't care if it's true or not. That's what language models might be good at. Computer programming involves language. Computer programming languages are languages. We are finding some use for language models in computer programming. I don't have time to tell you the story, but this is an app from Essential Science, a class that I teach online. This is an interactive activity where I ask questions and you click on the map and I tell you if you're right or not. I wrote the code to do that in a few minutes with a language model. I think that's really cool because computer programming is a language problem. And there are some ways in which a language model might be able to help. But important qualification: never think that the computer actually understands what it's doing. I understand that sentence. You understand that sentence. We can have a talk about whether it's true or not. ChatGPT made up that sentence, but it does not understand it at all. Let me show you an example. This is my favorite conversation with ChatGPT. This is me asking the language model a question. What is a five-letter word that rhymes with cat? Can you think of one? That's four letters. How about splat? That would work. Okay, here's ChatGPT's answer. The five-letter word that rhymes with cat is that. How many letters in the word that? That's me asking. The word that has four letters. So, this is me. The five-letter word that rhymes with cat has four letters. I apologize for the confusion. You are correct that has only four letters. This is ChatGPT talking. And it does rhyme with cat. A little snarky dig there. I did get the rhyming part right. If you are looking for a five-letter word that rhymes with cat, one example could be scat. Now, let's acknowledge what's amazing about that. That I can have a back-and-forth, grammatically correct, plausible-sounding conversation with a computer. There was nothing like that 5 years ago. That's new. There's something about that that's really, truly amazing. That's pretty cool. But at the same time, I am alarmed. I am deeply bothered that it is so wrong. It is confidently asserting wrong answers. And most troubling to me, it's not aware that it's wrong. And it's not learning anything. It seems to apologize and recognize its mistake, and it's all a fraud, because then it immediately makes the same mistake again. That is really troubling in terms of use cases for this technology. And let me tell you what's most alarming. I'm really bothered by the counterfeit emotion and pretending to learn. Think with me about the difference between three different things going on in someone's mind. When we're having a conversation and you realize that you're wrong, do you appreciate the difference between, I say I'm sorry because it's expected in this situation, Have you ever said, I'm sorry, but you're really not? You just know it's the right thing to say? That's what ChatGPT is doing here. It's giving an apology because it knows that's what people say in this situation. How different is that from truly being sorry? What would it mean for a computer to truly feel the emotion of sorrow? I'm confident that ChatGPT not only is not doing that, is not even capable of doing that. But can we take this even a level deeper? How different is it in your body, in your mind, in your spirit to feel guilty because you said sorry, but you didn't mean it? I don't think any computer has legitimate emotions. I'm confident that no computer has any sense of morality or conscience, right? We are too easy to say this looks intelligent. And I look at this conversation and I say, this is not human intelligence. This is nothing like. We're still on step one. ChatGPT can do that. We have not scratched the surface of two or three. Here's a fascinating conversation. Write me a sonnet about something important to you in the style of Shakespeare. I think that's something that a language model should not be able to do. But he will try. ChatGPT wrote that sonnet for me. Are you impressed? Does that sound intelligent? So I'm asking now, what is the thing that sonnet is about that is important to you? That's a question that would be easy for a human. The stars, moon, the vastness of the universe holds great importance to me as they inspire wonder, contemplation, and a sense of connection. That's a great answer that a person might say, right? Are you impressed? So I asked ChatGPT, you feel the emotion of wonder? No, of course not. I don't possess emotions or feelings like humans do. I don't experience wonder, joy, or any other emotions. I am only programmed to understand and generate text that reflects various emotions. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is all pretend. This is not real. There is nothing important to ChatGPT. He cannot write me a poem about something important to him. He can pretend. He can tell me what people say when you ask questions like that to them. Now, I want to assert that the first two lines are true, and something is very, very wrong with the third line. I don't like the word understand. I would say you are programmed to generate text that reflects emotions. I do not believe that you understand anything. I think potentially you can make wise use of language models if you keep in the back of your mind that they don't understand anything. And anything you read that gives you the opposite impression, you are being fooled. That is counterfeit intelligence. Another big problem with language models is that they were trained, and what they were trained on, they're good at. And when you move outside of their training even a little bit, they dramatically fail. They are remarkably fragile in a way that people are not. This is much easier to illustrate with pictures than words. We have language models that generate words. We have image models that generate pictures. So I asked Bing Image Creator, give me a picture of a man on a horse. Those are not real photographs. Those are artificially generated by computer. That's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. That's what it was trained for. It was trained on lots of images of people riding horses. But then I said, give me a picture of a horse on a man. That's weird. That doesn't happen. That was not in the training set. He's never seen anything like that. Now, if I give that to a human, can a human do that? You know exactly what I mean, and there's a picture in your mind, and maybe you can't paint that skillfully. You know what I'm talking about. You want to see what Bing Chat did? The exact same thing, because that's all he knows how to do, because that's what he was trained on. I'm saying he. It doesn't even understand that I'm asking for something different. So somebody says, well, you're just not a good prompt engineer. You didn't ask the question right. You need to ask a smarter question. Okay, I can play that game. What I mean more specifically is a man with a horse carried on his back. Is that more specific? Can you do that? How many legs does that horse have? And what's on his back? And what are those reins connected to? The more you look at that picture, the weirder that is. That first made me laugh, but the more I look at that, that's actually kind of creepy. This is what I'm saying. When you go outside of what he was trained for, he is very, very fragile. Now, that was Bing. You say, well, maybe Bing's a bad one. Here's another popular one. This is Stable Diffusion. I gave Stable Diffusion the same task. A man with a horse carried on his back. Do you like that better? That's half a horse and two people, and I don't know. So I wanted to try once more. Maybe this will help. Part of the problem is that horses don't ride on people because they're too big. So how about a large man carrying a small horse? Would that help? That's creepy. Now, yeah. The same thing happens with words. Language models produce words that are equal nonsense, but they don't strike you so obviously. You got to be very, very careful because you can't notice at a glance that words are nonsense. Let me show you in a parallel example with words. Which word does not belong? Green, yellow, red, blue. Anybody want to answer that? Red doesn't belong. Why?
It's at the other end of the spectrum.
The other end of the spectrum. Okay. Anybody thinking a different answer? Green doesn't belong because it's not a primary color. Anybody else have a third answer in mind? All right, let me show you ChatGPT's answer, all right? The word that does not belong in the sequence is yellow. The other words are all primary colors, green, red, blue. Or secondary colors, orange, purple. While yellow is also a primary color, so it seems to be the odd one out. Does that answer make any sense? That is nonsense. That is the verbal equivalent of the horse on a man. But if you're not paying careful attention, it sounds like a coherent sentence. You might skim that and think, yeah, it got it right. It's about primary colors. These are fragile outside of what they were trained for. Do you recognize this?
Which way do we go?
Pardon me. That way is a very nice way.
Who said that? Don't be silly, Toto. Scarecrows don't talk.
It's pleasant down that way, too.
That's funny. Wasn't he pointing the other way?
Of course, people do go both ways.
Why, you did say something, didn't you? Are you doing that on purpose? Or can't you make up your mind?
That's the trouble. I can't make up my mind. I haven't got a brain. Only straw.
How can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
I don't know. But some people without brains do an awful lot of talking. Don't they?
Some people without brains, do an awful lot of talking. To me, these language models are the scarecrow out of Wizard of Oz. They can talk, and it's amazing. But there is no brain. There is no understanding. There's a lot more we could say, but this is actually a pretty good place to stop. Because this is a good takeaway. If you can understand that AI models can do some pretty amazing things, but that they never actually understand what they're doing, that will help you understand what's going on. And to know that the world is crazy about AI, because from their worldview, this is the future. And from my worldview, this is just more technology, with all of the good and bad that brings.